Underlying the current global economic crisis is an unfolding human rights crisis, which targets the poorest and most vulnerable people on our planet. That's the alarm being raised by Amnesty International in its annual report, released on Thursday by Irene Khan, Secretary General of the London-based Human Rights Network. While violence and injustice against citizens over the past years has been justified by the so-called war on terror, violations of human rights are now being meted out in the name of fixing the financial crisis. Around the globe, Khan says, billions are living without proper shelter, sanitation or healthcare, and some two-thirds of the world's population are prisoners of poverty. Casualties, she says, of a gap in government investment that favours business and profits over people's lives.
We're sitting on a powder keg of injustice, inequality and insecurity. This is a time bomb of social, political, and economic problems. We believe in Amnesty International, the way in which human rights can pull us out of this economic crisis is by paying attention to those who are marginalized. We would like to see acknowledgement of human rights of poor people. We would like to see governments actively allow participation of poor people in decisions that affect their lives. We would like to see stronger commitment and accountability of governments, business leaders, international financial institutions to human rights. Their strategies, their financial strategies, their economic strategies, their development strategies have to acknowledge human rights, economic and social rights, the right to food, the right to housing, the right to health, as rights in which they have an obligation to invest.
The report, compiled each year in painstaking detail by Amnesty members in countries around the world, shines a spotlight on the billions being poured into banking systems while countries cut back on development aid and increasingly sideline their commitments to the Millennium Development Goals. Noting the close links between recession and repression in many countries, Amnesty warns against a rising tide of political insecurity, violence and xenophobia. Claudio Cordone is Amnesty's Senior Director for Research and Regions. He told me more about the concerns at the heart of this alarming report.
Well, we think that the economic crisis is exacerbating long-standing human rights problems. For example, let's look in Europe at the issue of migration. There's going to be more migrants trying to cross the sea, and with that you have xenophobia, discrimination. Look at the situation in South Africa with the migrants from Zimbabwe and how the riots that broke out a few months ago. And similarly, some of the endemic conflicts that still take place are also being not given the attention that they should, as world leaders focus on the economic crisis purely from an economic perspective. So in a sense, there are long-lasting problems, and we would want world leaders to address those by addressing the human rights aspects that lie behind the economic crisis.
Now, of course, most governments here in the West will say that their first priority is their own domestic crisis, trying to respond to the economic issues there. What do you say to that?
That the world is by now one single global entity, and you can't just isolate yourself. So if you want to deal with the issue of migration in Italy, for example, you need to deal with the conflicts that generate migrants and the economic conditions that, as they worsen, will produce more of that. If you want to improve the situation in poor countries, you should not cut foreign aid, for example. So everything is interconnected, and that's where we want the leaders, particularly of the G20, to recognize that in order to properly address even just the economic crisis in their own countries, even just out of a self-interest, they should deal with the big human rights challenges in the world.
The G20 leaders, of course, are meeting this summer here in Italy. What are your hopes for the outcome of that meeting? Do you think these issues will be a priority there?
there should be. We think the first thing would be to recognize that all human rights need to be pursued. And today, for example, we're calling on the United States to ratify the Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, and we're calling on China to ratify the Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. This would give a clear signal that all human rights need to be addressed together. At the same time, we would hope to see more global cooperation, not just to deal with the economies, but also to deal with some of the endemic conflicts from Israel and Palestine to the DRC, to the Congo, to other parts of the world that continue to generate problems, and ultimately to make a serious investment, not just in terms of financial terms, but also in terms of implementing human rights. And that includes, for example, making sure that there is proper rule of law, that there is accountability for abuses, that corporations are held to account and are regulated, and that states are able to provide the minimum services to their population.
This current financial crisis is expected to wipe out gains in poverty reduction over the last decade, isn't it? It does seem that any chance of achieving most of the Millennium Development Goals is fading fast, and there's not much, apparently, that we can do about that.
That's true in the sense that one of the flaws of the Millennium Development Goals is that they don't take into account the fact that poverty, for example, is not just a matter of income. It is a whole set of human rights that by them being violated, they cause poverty, deepen poverty, and also a consequence of poverty. So, for example, you need to address discrimination. You need to make sure that there aren't communities that basically are outcasts. You need to provide services, allow people to be able to express themselves and participate in decision-making that affect them. So that's, you know, back to the discourse on freedoms and so on. So all these issues are interrelated, and they need to be pursued at the same time as any particular initiatives in terms of debt or financial aid and so on. That's what we're looking for, an integrated approach that takes all human rights into account as the best way to deal with poverty and other global issues.
It would seem that the recent conflict, for example, in Sri Lanka showcases these issues that you're talking about, poverty, armed conflict and so on. And yet the international community pretty much sat by and was unable to do anything. How do you respond to that?
Yes, one of the challenges for the leaders of today is precisely to treat, first of all, conflicts in the same way. Conflicts need to be addressed by making sure that violations don't take place and by holding people accountable when that happens so that they don't get repeated. So that would be the first step. That's why there ought to be a proper investigation of what happened in Gaza in December and January and what has just happened in Sri Lanka, where there is sufficient evidence of serious crimes by both sides. And then you need to address the human rights long-term issues that affect these conflicts. Again, if you want to look at Israel, it's the issue of settlements, is the issue of the right to the refugees. If you want to look at Sri Lanka, it's the issue of discrimination of the Tamil population and so on. So all those things need to be addressed, and leaders need to recognize that. Otherwise, there's not going to be much progress, and with the economic situation worsening, things will just risk getting worse.
Let's talk about positive developments that have taken place over the past year. And you do highlight some of those, don't you, in this report?
Yes, we've had, in terms, for example, of the trend towards the death penalty abolition, we have more countries that have abolished the death penalty and a reduction in sentences. We have, with the new administration in the U.S., President Obama reaffirming in a clear way that torture is not acceptable, seeking to close Guantanamo, although there's a lot of work that needs to be done. In that way, we have the beginning of an interest or an approach by China to some of the conflicts that has been more positive than in the past. People have been held to account. President Fujimori in Peru has been convicted for human rights abuses in the past. And there is a growing sense that people are being, some of the worst criminals have been taken to justice, even though their numbers are small. So, yes, there are some positive elements in many respects.
Interestingly, Pope Benedict highlighted many of these issues of the connections between poverty and peace in his message for World Peace Day at the beginning of this year. What role do you think perhaps can the churches or faith groups play in this struggle that you're talking about?
Well, the church, of course, is very influential, and we welcome the attention to the poor that is at the heart of Christian social doctrine. I think there are many ways in which the Church can operate. Obviously, the Vatican as a state can participate and influence other states in the formulation of their policies, but also churches around the world can play a positive role. For example, we're going to look at the situation of the slums in Kenya, and there's been good positive involvement by churches, by the local church in the Matare settlement or the Deep Sea settlement. We are looking also at a similar situation in Angola, where we hope that the church that has significant land there will force the government to accept a proper process for evictions people are still at risk. Similarly, with regard to a situation of women, we're going to be highlighting the issue of maternal mortality, and that again, missions, hospitals can make sure that women receive obstetric care regardless of their economic condition, that women do have the right to determine whether they want to be pregnant or not as a way of reducing deaths and the other problems that arise from there. So there's a number of particular issues that we're looking at where we see a key role for local churches, but also in terms of the global leadership that the Pope himself can certainly exercise, and that we welcome and we encourage in that respect.
Amnesty is also launching this Demand for Dignity campaign, isn't it? Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, it's we want to contribute ourselves to the efforts to end global poverty, and by emphasizing that poverty is the result produces human rights violations of both civil and political rights, as well as economic, social, and cultural rights. So in a sense, it's a campaign to stress the indivisibility of human rights as a way to address poverty. And that's why we're calling on the USA and China to ratify the relevant treaties, to give the signal that they are also committed to all sets of rights. And then in concrete terms, we want to look at ways in which the poor can themselves empower to claim their rights, to have access to minimum services that should be provided regardless of the economic conditions of any country, to fight discrimination, to be protected from violence. It's often forgotten that the poor living in the slums and so on are those who are at most risk of being killed by criminal gangs or police operations. And then in concrete terms, we are starting by looking in particular at the issue of slums and forced evictions, the issue of maternal mortality, and the issue of regulating corporations that operate in a number of countries, sometimes are more powerful than these countries, and they themselves their operation can fuel human rights abuses. So overall is a way of addressing poverty that emphasizes the human rights connections, the human rights underlie poverty.
And my thanks there to Claudio Cordone, Amnesty International's Senior Director for Research and Regions.